This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
18 minutes to the top of the hour. Well, the South African Medical Association, SAMA, has voiced concerns over the impact of rolling blackouts on hospitals, saying it could pose risks for people undergoing emergency operations or affect babies in ICU. Well, they say a lot more than that. Their conversations are broad, and I've been listening to them also. SAMA's chairperson, Dr. Mvuyisi Mzukwa, of course, he is with me here tonight. Let's just bring the doc into the conversation immediately. Mvuyisi, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective.
Good evening to you, Denzel, and to your viewers and to your listeners, and thanks for inviting me.
Mvuyisi, I'm so glad you could join us tonight. I mean, you know, we try to get hold of you, and I also said to my producer today, please just bring the good doctor onto the program also, because I began to hear what you were talking about, and I saw some of the reports begin to say you're the latest to join the chorus in the South African Medical and with SAMA also is the latest to join the chorus talking about blackouts and ESCOM and what's happening in the, you know, hospitals and with doctors and stuff like that. But here's the thing that I actually heard you say. I actually heard you maybe speak more frankly about this than I have heard other people speak about it. You were actually talking about the fact that people were now either dying or were going to die in much higher numbers because of the kind of stuff that is beginning to impact the hospitals with issues related to ESCOM, with issues related to generators, with issues related to the health services in general.
That's correct, Denzel, and thank you so much. Yes, I think the concern, our grave concern, lies where patients have to receive emergency operations, those life-saving operations. Imagine, for example, a patient comes in with a stab heart.
Yeah.
You can't wait, you know, for that patient must go straight to theater and get assistance. Also, patients those mothers who are giving birth, who need emergency cesarean section. There's so many of these things. Babies who are born prematurely, who need that a warm incubator, which is powered by the electricity. So you do need all those things. And if you do not have a reliable power that is going to be there to save their lives, I understand people saying that, no, but they are generators. Those generators are not well maintained. Secondly, they don't kick in on time. Thirdly, we've got a problem of diesel. You know, where you find that diesel is expensive, but also you remember that at this point in time we were worried about running out of diesel because of the war between Russia and Ukraine. So those are the issues that we're bringing on the table. We already know that there are backlogs. You know, we're coming from the pandemic for 2 years, where we've been postponing elective surgeries. So elective surgeries are those that can wait. But I mean, even those, there's a time when an elective surgery then becomes an emergency because we've been waiting for a long time, and this has the condition has advanced.
Well, let's talk about that. Have we? And you're talking about what could particularly happen. My understanding is we've been having load shedding for a long, long time, and my understanding would be that we've already undergoing, you know, these kind of scenarios that you're talking about, let alone reliable power, you know, that one needs to begin to get from a generator for alternative or from alternative sources. If one just thinks realistically about it, when you start talking about not well maintained, diesel is a problem, they don't kick in time, then we are seeing deaths happen.
Exactly. And I'm glad that the minister, when he released his statement today, he actually has commissioned some of the senior officials in the department to really look into the impact of load shedding that has already had in terms of the delivery of services, and you know whether there are lives that have been lost during this point in time. I do believe that we have had complications already. Mm. I mean, just recently, I've been told that on a Friday, a hospital in Umtata had to postpone or cancel surgeries because there was no water, and that water apparently is linked to the power cuts because you've got to have power to pump water into the hospital. So if you have such problems already, I believe that there are people who have already lost their lives, and I believe that there are babies who have lost their lives. But the other thing, you know, this is going to eat into the budget of the healthcare system, because mm-hmm. after this, you will find litigations and all these things, and you know that already we are already at the back foot when it comes to litigations.
Mm-hmm. So my understanding then also would be rural areas would be worse hit. You use the example of Umtata, and I know Umtata really, really well because I am from that part of the world. So of course rural areas who do not have the kind of sophistication behind them, whereas in, you know, and I'm talking about sometimes due to lack of the expertise sometimes, or sometimes lack of the kind of money that needs to flow to the rural areas. So my question then is this, Vuyisi, if we have been experiencing load shedding for a long time already, if we knew it was going to come, and I'm talking about government in this particular instance, together with the medical association, right? If we already knew these things were going to happen, why wasn't there a real proper conversation between government, Eskom, and the medical association that says, this is going to happen. We need to, you know, find a way so that hospitals and other medical associations, clinics and the likes do not get impacted, and or they, you know, whatever reserves or whatever technology they need is given to them, and so that we don't have deaths. Why wasn't there that linkage when the conversation is, I would think, the conversation would be standard practice. Why is that conversation not happening, and why did that conversation not even happen?
Well, look, Denzel, you know, as the Medical Association, we've been raising issues that are affecting, you know, a healthcare system. Mm. And directly to the Department of Health, and with the hope that we've got a leader there, a minister. Mm. He's not alone. There's a DG. There's other officials who are supporting him. Mm. And we believe that, you know, that team has a capability of, being able to see in the future and plan accordingly.
Foresight, yeah.
But exactly. But that's not what we can see as we speak. Mm. I mean, I would tell you of many other things that we have raised with the Department of Health, including the frustration of healthcare workers who had to leave the country. When we raised that issue, we were told that we are fear mongers. Mm. And now there are reports from PPS and everyone else to support what we've been raising to government. This issue as well, it is known to government. I mean, there are politicians who are not experiencing load shedding. They are exempted from load shedding. Why can't we do the same with the most vulnerable in society, the patients in the hospitals? Mm. Who is important here, a healthy politician or a sick patient in the hospital?
Mm. Let's talk about litigation, and you're saying we're already on the back foot where that's concerned, because, you know, even without load shedding, even without Eskom in the equation, that kind of scenario already, you know, people do litigate because of, you know, whatever happens in a particular hospital, and they will feel that, you know, their rights were violated, and or, you know, something would have happened that, you know, they feel that the law needs to step in. In the instance of hospitals, Eskom, and the medical, I'm only assuming, you brought it up, I'm only assuming that, you know, the litigation processes, the litigation aspects of post-co, I don't even want to say post-ESCOM because I don't see a post-ESCOM. The litigation processes in the future then are just going to be enormous, and that's what hospitals are going to be dealing with and hospital administrators are going to be dealing with, instead of actually looking at, you know, the everyday concerns whereby they'd rather be, you know, concerned with the health of a patient, they're rather going to be concerned about, you know, fighting elements in court.
You know, the responsibility of the Department of Health is to provide affordable, accessible, quality healthcare to all South Africans. And they need to do that using their resources at their disposal and making sure that those resources are there's equity, they are distributed equally amongst the societies. And on top of that, they need to be managing resources in such a way that, you know, there is no loss of lives in the process. The decisions that are being made, they must avoid, you know, loss of lives. But that's not what we're seeing at the moment. And the painful part about this whole thing is that when communities are frustrated, they are not going to see government officials. They are going to see the face of the health system, which are healthcare workers. And they are going to fight healthcare workers, you know, because they would think what has happened to their relatives, it is because of the carelessness of healthcare workers. Yet healthcare workers are dealing with other things, you know, like, you know, these power cuts and all these things. So, you know, we are at this point in time making communities to fight with healthcare workers. So I think those are all elements that need to be taken into consideration. You can imagine the impact of a failed emergency cesarean section where you are going to have a baby with disabilities because there are shortages of oxygen and all these things. So this is important because it's going to come back. It's going to bounce back to government in terms of litigations. It's not something that we are thumbsucking. You know, we know already that government, you know, is dealing with lots of, I mean, most of its budget is going to litigation, you know, to settle these things. Yes, already.
Vuyisi, where does the NHI sit in all of this? I mean, futuristically, we're talking about an NHI, we're talking about a healthcare system for everybody, and we're talking about, you know, a healthcare system that, of course, needs to be reliable, needs to be there, needs to accommodate everybody. But if the medical fraternity, if the medical facilities already at this particular point cannot deal with an overload, just the kind of numbers that are already there. The NHI in you know what? I am one of those people who would say, please, can we have it? But I'm always one of those people who would say, in this particular scenario, not just with ESCOM, in the state of the medical, you know, fraternity and where it finds itself, I have this lingering voice also that begins to say, maybe they just can't deal with it.
You know, you're spot on there, Denzel, because if you recall, we made our submissions regarding the NHI. And we raised our concerns because what we told even the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, we informed them that we support what we call the universal healthcare coverage.
And I think nobody disagrees with that.
Exactly, exactly. But we had then raised serious issues about NHI. And the issue that we raised was the issue of saying you are pulling funds, you know, billions of rands into this big pool, but now you have nothing to safeguard that in terms of corruption. You are saying the minister is going to be appointing a board or a chairperson of the board, or even that board, you know, that's going to manage the fund. We don't think that, you know, it should be just the minister. And at that time, we're not talking to a person. We're talking to the office. Yeah, so that's our understanding. And there are many issues that were raised. We then said, no, we think you need to attend to these matters before you talk about NHI. And you must remember, Denzel, that NHI is just a finance model.
Absolutely.
It does not talk to other things. You understand? It does not talk to other things. Remember, we don't have a shortage of funds in South Africa. We have a shortage of misuse and corruption. That's the main issue.
There was one particular doctor I was listening to, and he was suggesting that over 80% of government hospitals at this particular point don't even qualify for the NHI in the current space. They don't even their standing does not even allow them or let them qualify to be in good standing for the NHI. I mean, that kind of statistic is horrendous when you think about it like that.
Yes, according to the Office of the Healthcare of Health Standards Compliance, you know, the report is exactly as you put it, Denzel, that over 80% of institutions are not ready. And, you know, you can imagine, you know, with the type of cadre we have, where we just have deployment, you know, in offices like the CEO, and you find that this person does not really have the necessary qualifications to run an institution.
The administrators.
But on top of that, yes, you've got acting CEOs and all these things, you know, and it's not taking us anywhere.
Here's a last question I have to ask you, Mvuyisi. I suggested to you then in the beginning that, you know, one would have thought common sense or common knowledge would have anticipated that if you're going to have load shedding to the extreme that we're having it, you would have naturally thought that government would have had that foresight, would have had a plan for the most vulnerable in place, that, you know, government would have had Eskom in the room and also the medical fraternity in the room and said, people, we're going to have load shedding over a period of so many years. Here's a particular budget. We need generators. Where do they need to go? We need other sources of energy, and or what other alternatives can we get? I had suggested that I would have thought that would be common sense and common knowledge, one would have expected to have happened. Now, obviously, me and you don't know why those conversations never happened. Here's the question then. Sitting at SAMU, the South African Medical Association, SAMA, what then needs to happen? Because it's not only you raising your voice. Every single other person is beginning to put their hand up in the medical space and beginning to say it can't carry on like this. Doctors are leaving every day. And even when you want to speak about that, it's even ridiculed and said, no, well, let them leave if they want to leave. Other doctors are saying, we are so tired, we are done. Well, you know, we've got new doctors entering the system. You never hear a realistic assessment of the health industry from somebody who sits in an official capacity. When then do we really begin to realize or anticipate what's going on? Because even you have entered the fray now. But what difference does that make?
We thought, you know, I think that to start with, you know, the problem of the system in South Africa is leadership. And unfortunately, I'll be frank with you, this government does not have a good track record of taking care of those who are vulnerable. Not only in the healthcare sector, look at the transport industry. Just recently, we've seen school children dying, 21 of them dying, and it's not happening for the first time. And the government is aware of the, you know, these challenges, but there is no solution in place. You know, it's the same thing that is happening here in the healthcare industry or in healthcare sector. There is no foresight, you know, to say now we have a serious problem of load shedding. Can't we at least protect you know, the most vulnerable. But what you see and what we have witnessed is the protection of politicians, you know, who are spared from this load shedding. Mm. So if they can do it for politicians, then they can do it for sick patients as well.
Mm. Dr. Mvuyisi Mzukwa, thank you so much. And thank you for being honest and frank about the kind of situation, the kind of scenarios that are happening in your space as a professional. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Denzel.
Thank you. That, of course, is Dr. Mvuyisi Mzukwa. And he is, of course, chairperson of the South African Medical Association. It's frightening when you hear him speak like that as the chairperson of the South African Medical Association, SAMA.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.